8 p.m. Wednesday. It is time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, and alongside a team saturated in talent, Greg Audell, Drs. Warren Holloman and Mary Edgerton, media maven and engineer Nicole Rochelin, and gifted intern Tatiana Gago, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls and transport us to magical worlds before returning us safely to the present. You know, for nearly 10 years, we've hosted outstanding storytellers inspired by turning points and trajectories that crystallize the defining moments of their lives. Personal narratives are the principal fare for most, with a healthy dose of traditional stories thrown in for good measure. Every teller shares the love of a good story and another element of story success, the love of books, where they first learn to weave characters, conflict, and plot into robust and compelling language worthy of communicating in spoken and written form. And my guests, Joy Preble and Laura Gravelin, are two extraordinary women who know books and stories. Joy and Laura are children's specialists at Brazos Bookstore, a longtime friend of So What's Your Story, and one of the few remaining independent bookstores, as well as a Houston institution. Joy is the author of several young adult novels, including the Dreaming Anastasia and the Sweet Dead Life series. Her newest novel, It Wasn't Always Like This, is considered a suspenseful treat with a gooey romantic center. Sounds like a bestseller to me. The fusion of the poignant and whimsical is part of Joy's signature touch. Books are Laura's second love, after candy. She loves old fairy tales and spent her childhood looking for hidden magic by sifting through them. Her tastes have matured, but she still gravitates towards sales of enchantment. And the kid's assistant at Brazos Bookstore, she never is far away from the allure of magic. How are you two doing? I'm glad you're here.
We're doing great.
Yeah, you are doing great, right? Mm-hmm. You're doing great. Now, the idea of getting here was interesting. I told Laura that I love her because she got a little lost, just slightly. And anybody who knows me, that I get lost coming out of the studio. I have no idea where I'm going. I gave Custer his directions. But the idea is that we got off to a really wonderfully fun start. And tonight we're going to talk about stories and books and everything great. You know, Ben Rybeck has been on this program a couple of times, and I had two book signings at Brazos Bookstore, and we love our association with Brazos. Joy, tell us, what do you do as a children's specialist?
I do a lot. I'm the buyer for everything from board books to young adult. I merchandise. I work with customers. I sell books, obviously. I book author events for the kids' programs, so that includes school visits. I do weekly story time, middle grade book club, kids' programming, building relationships with schools and libraries. I boss Laura around a little bit sometimes.
Oh, that's great. That's got to be fun. Yeah, that's got to be fun. And Laura, what do you do as an assistant?
I boss her
around too, or just
a little? No, mm-hmm. I do a lot of odds and ends, and yeah, every day is sort of different. I help keep the kids' room stocked and organized and just looking nice. I also help with story time and events, and you know, good old customer service. And I get bossed around by Joy.
That's great. And later on, when you talk a little bit about the Brazos calendar, you're going to talk to us about story time, because our listeners are really going to want to know what that means. This is an incredible storytelling town, and I know that we say this every week, and people wonder whether that's hyperbole, but it's not. This really is a pretty magnificent storytelling town, and Brazos is one of the reasons why. Joy, your first story is really a perfect first story for this program, because it's a love story of sorts. It's a voyage that led you to your job as a children's young reader specialist, and you call it The Power of Story. Share it with us.
Thank you. I was 8 years old when my mother first put Louisa May Alcott's Little Women in my hands. I already had a deep love of stories. She'd read fairy tales to me from the time I was little, and old-fashioned poetry like this one from the 1700s called The Spider and the Fly. "Will you step into my parlor?" said the spider to the fly. "'Tis the prettiest little parlor that ever you did spy." She'd read it, and I'd shout, "No, fly, no, the spider just wants to eat you." This spider wasn't like the kind one in Charlotte's Web, and the fly had a gigantic ego and honestly therefore comes to a gruesome end. And my mother, ever the fan of moralistic fiction, would say, "See, this is what happens when you don't think things through. I'll get eaten by a spider, I would think." Of course, that's not what she meant at all. But Little Women was a different sort of revelation. The story of sisters Jo, Meg, Amy, and Beth grabbed me from page one. I was a Jo, of course, because she was a writer and a teller of stories, and so was I, having penned a horrid Thanksgiving play when I was 7. Actually, I saw pieces of myself in all the March girls, and especially my shyness in Beth, whose death shocked me even more than Charlotte's death had devastated me in Charlotte's Web. Beth, a human girl, not a spider, died because she had gone to help the poor Hummel family and caught scarlet fever, which weakened her heart. So what was this all about? I was so distraught. It was actually another year before I finished the rest of the novel and found out what happened with the other sisters. This was the power of story. It made me feel things. It allowed me to see myself at the same time that it afforded me a safe glance into worlds that were not my own. The following year, I picked up a copy of Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time at my local library. I've reread it almost every year since then. There's this scene where Meg is searching for her father, and she finds herself on a planet where everyone has to be the same. She's walking down this suburban sort of street, and outside each matching house is a kid bouncing a ball. Every kid is bouncing in unison, except one. Of course, his mother races out and drags him inside because that was shameful for him to be different. It had such a huge impact on me, this idea that conformity in the extreme can be dangerous and that it's our differences that give us strength. The years after that, I followed my tastes, Agatha Christie mysteries and Nancy Drews, classic sci-fi, historical romance, contemporaries, fantasies, biographies, horror, thrillers. I haunted used bookstores, toted around thick mass market paperbacks, which I would read every free second. I was a free-range reader, lucky to have parents who never censured my book choices. Occasionally, I'd pick up something I wasn't ready for, like those bodice rippers I snuck from my mother's nightstand. Usually, it would end up boring me, and I'd move on to something else. I got an English degree and taught high school and tried not to ruin anyone else's love of reading, which sometimes happens when your teacher is too focused on test scores or you're reading something that challenges you in uncomfortable ways. Sometimes it's an excuse people give for not doing their homework. I traveled. I fell in love. I got married. I started a family. I wrote my own stories now and then, testing the waters. At some point, I remembered Jo March. I began writing more seriously. I wanted to be published. I wanted my books in the world and on shelves and in people's hands. I got a literary agent. Together, we sold my first novel, a book called Dreaming Anastasia. It changed everything, that story. No one expected it to do much. Most books don't, by the way. But this one, that tons of publishers had rejected until one said yes, well, it kept selling. The publishers asked for a sequel and then for a third, both of which would have to be written. They booked me on tours and festivals. They flew me here and there. I was still teaching then, and so I'd tote a backpack full of essays to grade on the plane. I was writing furiously on book two, amazed that this was my life now. Somewhere in the midst of all this sudden and unexpected success, I went for an annual checkup. Routine stuff, nothing special, until my family practitioner poked a finger at my neck and said, "Have you noticed this?" He poked again. "Joy," he said, "I think you have thyroid cancer. I'm going to call my colleague at MD Anderson." At midnight the night before surgery, I finished book two. That story was the only thing I could control. I wrote like my life depended on it. In some ways, it probably did. I figured at least it would be done when I kicked the bucket. Instead, I recovered. Book two got edited and published. I wrote book three, and then birthed four more books into the world, each with its own crazy journey. I quit teaching full-time. I wrote about things I wanted to understand, about families and friendship, love and loss, about those moments when the rug gets pulled out from under you. What happens to a character when I take away everything? Who are people at their core? I wanted to know. But writing is a solitary activity, or as I frequently describe it, it's me in dirty yoga pants typing, punctuated now and then by me eating a spoonful of peanut butter or the dog whining that she needs to go out. Sometimes it's me staring out the window. Sometimes it's me thinking that I need to shake things up again. 2 years ago, just as book seven, aptly titled It Wasn't Always Like This, was arriving, I took a job as children's specialist and buyer at Brazos Bookstore here in Houston. The last time I'd worked a cash register had been during my summer at McDonald's freshman year of college. But there I was, a bookseller. Here's the thing about selling children's books. People, particularly adults, bring all sorts of emotional baggage to the game. Maybe someone made them read a book they didn't like. Maybe no one ever read to them. Maybe they didn't have access to books. Maybe they're just nervous about picking the right book for a child. Mostly, they haven't thought about kids lit at all beyond Dr. Seuss and Goodnight Moon. My kid has read all the Harry Potters, they'll tell me, even if their child is only five. I rarely question this. We all love Harry Potter. I understand that they may not realize what a golden age of story we're in right now, what a treasure trove of other diverse, wonderful novels are on the shelves. Sometimes they've thought about it too much and feel frozen. What picture book will ensure my toddler's acceptance to medical school 20 years from now? So I ask them, what will be fun to read at bedtime? Do you want a quiet, sweet book or a raucous, funny one? Tell me what your child likes. Tell me what he doesn't like. What was the last book that totally blew you away? I try to be clear about why I like a book, what excites me about it. Often I do this casually. I just read this and I couldn't put it down, I say. The characters are endearing and funny. Like all my colleagues, I work on what we call the elevator pitch, the quick sentence or two that tells what this book is about and who might like it, what other books it's similar to. Sometimes I read small passages aloud just so they can hear the voice. Once a customer said to me, well, everything sounds good when you read it. I decided that was a compliment. Maybe. We are a carefully curated store, and it's my job and my pleasure to put books in people's hands that they might not have heard of. My job to find books that represent experiences and cultures, gender and belief authentically. The publishing industry is having long and sometimes painful conversations about how not every author can properly tell every story. The right book at the right time is like this huge miracle. But the wrong book doesn't necessarily doom you. Just because I hated Moby Dick at 15 doesn't mean I'm ruined forever. In fact, I came back to it this past week and discovered it's really amazingly clever and even funny in spots. Still, when we bring exactly the right author to a school on school visits, and I see students leaning forward in their seats, hanging on every word, lining up to get books signed, I think, this is a big responsibility, this book-selling thing I do. I try hard to get it right. Story is powerful. Primal. Story tells us who we are and who we are not. It changes lives. Whether reading or writing or selling books, this is what I know.
Joy, when you told me that you were going to tell the story, I thought, and, you know, I asked you this question, well, will it have conflict? Will it have the sorts of ingredients that a story has? And I'm embarrassed to even have asked you that because this is called The Power of Story, but it's more aptly labeled The Joy of Life, you know, in many ways.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. It was just a beautiful story, and there's so much in there. Laura, is this the first time you ever heard the story?
It is, yeah.
What did you think?
I thought it was wonderful. I don't know. I think everybody kind of always wonders about their colleagues a little and, you know, think like, oh, they're super cool. I want to get to know them. I don't really know how to go about that.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so this was fantastic for me.
Yeah. And I think that so many of us can relate to that because we have colleagues, friends, and you know, it takes a story to really get to know who they are. And sometimes all we really think we're doing is having a conversation, sharing something. We don't even think we're disclosing anything, but in fact we are. What was it, your illness that ignited your interest in becoming a full-time writer, or I should say getting out of teaching, or the other way around?
I think it was because, you know, you're very clearly aware that you have no idea how long you have, and and so you might as well do the thing you love.
Yeah, that is unfathomable. That has to be incredibly frightening. And you said you might die, and mm-hmm. you have to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Just to shift gears for a moment, what grade did you teach?
I taught high school, so I taught everything from 9th to 12th most of the time.
Yeah, I taught 9th grade English a long time ago. And
did
the
you?
Only way, well, yeah, the only way I got them to read anything is I told them that Romeo and Juliet is a sex story. It isn't, but I had to tell them something. It was a little bit of that, but
well,
It is a sex story. But was there any novel or novella that you taught and students just said, I don't get this, Ms. Preble. I don't get this. Why are we reading it? Why is it a classic? Why on earth is this required? Was there one book, one story that manifested itself as being questionable more than anything else?
You know, you may be disappointed in the answer. I mean, you know, it depends. It varies from student to student. Mostly my philosophy always was, I'm not going to teach something that I don't absolutely love. And so as long as I wasn't doing that, such as I will never teach Ayn Rand. So as long as I don't teach something I despise,
right?
No offense to the Ayn Rand fans.
It's going to work.
It's going to work.
I know. That makes sense. That makes absolutely sense to me. Now, Laura, you love fairy tales, right?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, and I know that you have a few favorites, right? Well, mm-hmm. what are some of your favorite fairy tales?
So I particularly love Russian fairy tales. So especially Baba Yaga and Koshchei the Deathless. But my absolute
Nicole has those. Don't you have those?
No.
Okay.
No.
I just, somehow, yeah. Tatiana knows what they are, though, right?
Ooh, I love fairy tales.
I know you do, but you know,
Deathless.
Oh my gosh! Oh, I love Deathless.
Wow.
Oh, Catherine Unvalente is.
Actually, have a conversation with. I love that.
Catherine Unvalente is my queen. Oh my goodness.
So Russian tales, and mm-hmm. what are some others?
And my absolute favorite is a German fairy tale. It's called Thousand Furs. And you know, so it's kind of your traditional, you know, princess kind of asserts her independence, which, you know, I loved as a kid. Runs away from an arranged marriage, but best part of it was that she fit all of her things into 3 walnut shells. And for me, like, that was just the coolest thing. Like, she wasn't weighed down by worldly possessions. And so to this day, as homage to that, I pack really light. I mean, not like walnut light, but, you know, I do well,
yeah, I want you to come into my storytelling class. I talk about the fact that now we're going to talk about traditional stories. And they go, you know what? I'm not feeling well. Can I leave now?
Yeah.
I'm just not really. Now, a lot of people view fairy tales, fantasies, folk tales, and myths as pretty much synonymous, but they're not, right?
Right.
Give us a real quick rendition of how they're different.
Okay. So I think usually mythology has religious connotations. For example, all of Greek or Chinese mythology has to do with the culture's mm-hmm. pantheon of gods. And the difference is kind of minor between folk tales and fairy tales. Basically, a folk tale comes from an oral tradition, so it wasn't written down to begin with. It was told around fires and at home.
Right.
So interestingly enough, I did a little research. Paul Bunyan is actually not a folk tale. It has some folktale elements, but mm-hmm. it would be categorized officially as a fairy tale because it was originally written down and
very
not spoken.
Cool. Very, very Ooh. Cool. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's, you know,
fun fact.
Yeah, Tatiana's over there thinking, she was in my class thinking I lied to her. And I didn't, you know, but Laura knows more than I do. I just want you to know that. Everybody doesn't know Okay, I just want Tatiana thinks I know everything.
Disclaimer.
Well, but what I tell them is that folktales are designed to sort of keep customs and traditions alive.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? And a fairy tale, it has a lot of very familiar characteristics as we have in real time. I mean, you know, fantasy typically starts in one world, goes to another, and then returns.
Yeah.
Like Wizard of Oz. But my students have never heard of the Wizard of Oz. And that's when I usually beat them up. And I leave, wondering what their problem is.
Excellent teaching method.
You know, very good. Yeah, that's what I usually do. But the Wizard of Oz, and then I explain to them that a myth, from my understanding, it's sort of a way of explaining the inexplicable.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Does that make sense to you?
It makes sense.
Right?
Yeah. Why'd that flower grow here or whatever? Yeah.
You know, yeah. Ancient Greek. Right. Very, very good. Fascinating. Now, we know that books are your second love, and everybody wants to know what your favorite candy is, because that's your primary love. Isn't that right?
Yeah. That's...
You must love Halloween when you were a kid.
Oh, Halloween's my favorite holiday to
it rocks.
This day.
I know. Me too. Mm-hmm.
And I can attest to her love of sugar.
Really?
It's frightening.
Well, you know, you'd have a lot of competition with me. But what is your favorite candy?
So I love anything fruity, so Starbursts especially. But the pinnacle of candy, you can only get it during springtime. It is the Reese's Easter eggs.
I see.
It's the perfect blend of chocolate and peanut butter. Their peanut butter is more smooth
nice.
Than the
right.
normal peanut butter
right.
cup.
Right.
Don't get me going.
Yeah.
I can keep
going. Yeah, I know you can. Yeah, my favorite candy is one that comes in a wrapper. That's my favorite kind. But yeah, well, I see that you know as much about candy as you do traditional stories. And I would venture to guess an awful lot more about both. You have a story for us that sort of centers on how you steered into a book career.
Mm-hmm.
Share it with us.
Yeah, so I'm fresh out of college, and so the number one question that I get is, what are you doing with your life? Which, by the way, college grads don't want to hear this from people. If you have an answer, it's great. But if you don't have an answer, oh, it gets awkward real quick. But luckily, I have an answer. I get to say I'm the kids' assistant at Brazos Bookstore, which is simple enough. But my goal for the future is to own and operate my own bookstore. And so for someone who's known me since I was a kid, or like at any point in my life, this seems like a really obvious thing. I've been obsessed with books my entire life. I love organization and creating aesthetically pleasing spaces. It just seems like the obvious next thing. Which I think when making life decisions, that makes it so much more difficult to see as an option when it's very obvious. So a little bit of context. I'm the youngest of three. So I suffer occasionally from youngest child syndrome. My whole family and my whole town growing up, it's a university town, they're all very academically inclined. So I felt like I had to do something in the world of academia. And, you know, I knew that this wasn't something that I was absolutely loved, that I was super passionate about, but I kind of pushed that to the back of my head. I decided to do art history, kind of a spoonful of sugar philosophy, because I loved art, so I felt like, you know, maybe doing art-related academia wouldn't be as painful as, say, math, for example. No offense to math geeks out there. I just don't understand you. But... you know, I'd still get a PhD after my name, so I'd still be impressive and worthwhile as a human being. So my sophomore year of college, I was majoring in art history. It was going great. And at the beginning of the year, I sat down for kind of a get-to-know-each-other meeting with one of my professors. And it was really nice, and she's fantastic. And then she asked me what would I do if I could do anything in the world not related to academia. And my first thought was, oh, I have to think of something impressive that's, you know, just close enough to academia to be impressive, but like, you know, so she still feels like I've answered the question, like far enough away.
Right.
But the answer that came to mind was that I would own a bookstore. If I could really do anything that I wanted, I'd run a bookstore, I'd create a community of artistically minded people and have a place for them to come share ideas and meet other people and just relax. I could support local artists by selling their work. I could host poetry slams and children's reading time and just help people in my community foster their love of reading, especially kids and young adults, and just create a space where people could hang out and have quiet time and just escape. And so about 5 minutes into me going on and on about my hypothetical bookstore, my professor stopped me and she said, you know, this seems like something that you're actually really passionate about. Why aren't you doing it? Which, you know, seems like a very obvious question, but this became a very big deal for me. I kept thinking, why don't I, for the rest of the day? So then I decided to do something about it. I did some research and reached out to a few bookstores and bookstore owners. I started interviewing them for advice in the field, and then I started working in bookstores. And it's kind of sad, but it really took someone who I respected, who was in a field that I respected, sort of giving me permission, so to speak, to choose a career path that wasn't traditionally impressive or academically rigorous. And now I'm so much happier than I know I would have been if I'd chosen to continue on towards a doctorate. And, you know, I think this is something that a lot of people struggle with. As kids, we all have career ideas that sound super exciting to us, like acting or writing. Personally, I wanted to be a space pirate. But as we grow up, these choices seem less viable. And it's true, they can be financially risky or, in my case, not actually a career. So I think we let those dreams go. And part of this is the process of growing up, of becoming more responsible and changing your values. But I think a small part of it is simply a lack of faith in yourself. Yes, it's risky. No, it's not the safe option. But sometimes it's the option that's going to make you happiest in the long run, which is really underrated in today's society. So now I'm doing something I'm absolutely passionate about, that I love, and that's the most you can ever ask for.
Absolutely. That's a beautiful story.
Thanks.
And it really is. It really is a full circle kind of a story. There's so many lessons in there. Truly, there are. I just want our listeners to know that you are professionally ambidextrous. You went to Rice, and you studied theater and art history.
Yes.
So you're not just a book person. You really do know a lot about art, and you are an extraordinarily articulate person, and I'm
Thank
really
you.
Proud to have you here and to have you tell that story. You're from Ames, Iowa.
I am, yes.
Great town. That's where Iowa State is.
Mm-hmm. Go right? Cyclones.
Go Cyclones. And great story. If there's a lesson for us to learn, if there is a one-sentence lesson that we should draw from that story, what would it be?
One sentence. I think really examine your values and make sure that you're choosing the path that makes you and everyone around you happiest.
Beautiful. And you come first.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. You come first. This is Hank Rubicek with Nicole Rocherlin on the boards, and you are listening to guest storytellers Joe Preble and Laura Gravelin on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.1 in Huntsville. And Tatiana's running the boards tonight. She is just showing her skill all over the place, while Tatiana is watching us have some fun in here, and Nicole taking pictures of us all, because we are on YouTube. We'll be talking about that in just a few minutes. But first, Houston has a wealth of storytelling venues, as I made reference to a little bit earlier, and Brazos has a calendar of events for anyone who loves books, stories, literature, and a lot more. And I'd like the two of you to tell us a little bit about the writers and events that will be gracing 2421 Bissonnette.
We've got a lot, don't we, Laura?
So many. Oh, my goodness.
Give us a
so
synopsis.
Many. We do over 250 events a year. So in terms of kids events, story time, 10:30. Every Saturday morning, we do a picture book or two and a craft and coloring and a snack. Snack is very important part of storytelling.
Very much.
Very much. We've got our Where's Waldo coming up, where you're hunting with, how many businesses do we have?
Oh, my goodness. I think it's 30 this year.
30 businesses.
Yeah.
Come into the store this Sunday, get a card, and then you can go hunting Little Waldo in every business and get prizes. We've got Middle Grade Book Club. We have Princess Diaries McHabit coming. And
very excited for this.
And Little Elliot's author, Mike Curato, coming. Mm-hmm. And who's some of our adult ones? Who do we have?
Some of our adult ones. Well, we did just have David Sedaris. That's passed, but that was a big deal for us and super fun. Let's see, what other adult ones do we have?
Oh, Jodi Picoult.
Oh, yes.
Jodi Picoult is coming.
A great slate of characters. Yeah. You really do. Really some just marvelous, marvelous authors and really good presenters. Now, tell us where we can get this whole slate of lists, because we don't want people to think they have to write all of this down. There's they can go.
They don't have to. They can go to the Brazos bookstore website, which is basically brazosbookstore.com. Mm-hmm. They can come on into the store and sign up for the newsletter, both the adult and the kids, and that's honestly the most efficient way to get the updated information.
And you're not going to find more professional, a better cluster of folks at Brazos, and that's the truth. You guys really do rock. And tell us about the story time on Saturdays.
So, as I said, story time is starts at 10:30. Store opens at 10, so at 10 we've got coloring out, we've got snack out. Everybody can kind of shop the kids' room, hang out. And then we have either I will read or Laura will read, depending on the day. Or we have a nice slate of guest readers this Saturday. In fact, Kate Berry from Austin is coming to read her debut picture book, Penguin and Tiny Shrimp Don't Do Bedtime.
Beautiful.
Which is coming.
You do a lot of things for children.
We do
a lot of things for children. And I say that because some people think, kids aren't into books. They are so wrong. Kids are into books. If we give them an opportunity to
be,
right? And you got a story about that a little bit later.
I do.
But in the meantime, Nicole and Tatiana, I know that you've got a few story venues to insert, right?
You know we do, because this is one rocking, and I say hip-hopping, storytelling town. Best place to start is with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, and they meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. Be sure to visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for upcoming events and all of our past So What's Your Story programs, and that's every single solitary show since 2008, listed under the menu button radio program. And you know, Tatiana, I know you have more to add to the H-Town's finest storytelling lineup, don't you, girl?
Oh, Nicole, yes, absolutely. Everyone should join our friends at the Moss the second Tuesday of the month at Warehouse Live. The next one is July 10th, and the theme will be age. Dr. Hank certainly has many years to draw.
You know, that's just not just keep going.
Also, we want our listeners to stay addicted to So What's Your Story and to know that not having a radio is no excuse for missing our program, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and Facebook Live. Don't forget to visit us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page and to share our page with your friends. And we love it if you like us when you leave. Nicole, did we cover everything? Oh, well, Nicole, I will say that we also have YouTube, so you can enjoy.
Nicole is taking YouTube right now. That's why she won't listen. She's doing YouTube right now, and she's doing a great job.
I'm doing Facebook.
You are doing Facebook. Whatever it is you're doing, you're taking pictures, and I love the way...
Millions of people are watching.
Joy and Laura look, at least. Get that off of me. You know I hate looking at myself on the camera, because I'm so old. Just ask Tatiana. She'll tell you.
No. Well, according to your students, you're the hottest professor at U of H downtown.
I filled all of that stuff out.
You have the chili pepper on Rate My Professor.
You can't get any better than that. A PhD, and what do I have to show for it? A red hot chili pepper. That's all
pepper.
You want. Yes. But listen, I got to brag a little bit. I really do, because I was asked on part of the show, I was asked to do a storytelling workshop at Tejas Storytelling Festival. This is a big deal. It's the biggest festival in the state. On Friday morning, and they have asked me to do it because of this show. They know about the show. It's a premier show. It is the premier storytelling show in the state. So just letting you know that we are getting out there, thanks to you two lovely ladies and our magnificent guests. All the right stuff. All the right stuff. Now, Joy, I had a pull from you the fact that you are an accomplished young adult novelist. And I would like to know, and you started to allude to this earlier, but what are some of the themes that are better suited for younger readers than adults. You talked about baggage, and I love that word because it really does fit here.
Mm-hmm. It does. I mean, you know, I really think that themes in any novel are themes in every novel, because if you're talking about any good story, ultimately, including the ones we've told here tonight, ultimately it's about what it means to be a human being on this planet. So it's about the good, it's about the bad, it's about the ugly, it's about the scary, it's about pretty much everything in between. And the difference might be that, like, a chapter book is going to be more about the conflicts are going to revolve more about home and school. When you get into middle grade novel, it may touch have a little touch of romance, but not that much. And then with YA, you're going to, other than the fact that you have teenage protagonists and you're really, this isn't a flashback, this is happening in real time. It's the same themes as you would find in adult novels.
It really is. And it just, younger readers are fresh, and we have to be able to, I don't know if the word is not distort their view of the world, but maybe that's a way of using it. You, one of your novels, Finding Paris, Balzer Bray, Harper Collins publisher, it's a story that School Library Journal calls an intricate guessing game of devotion, romance, and quiet desperation.
That'll get you, right?
Yeah, it really is.
That,
you know,
quiet
what?
Desperation
jump
gets
right
you.
Into it. Jump
just
right
jump
into
right
it.
Into
yes.
it? Okay.
Read a section.
I will.
We'll talk a little bit about what inspired this.
This is just great. Right. This is the beginning.
Okay.
My sister leans over me as I'm trying to sleep. Tobias and I broke up, Paris says. I need pie. Go away, I mumble, face half jammed against my pillow. I squint at her in the darkness. It's late. Leo, she lingers on the O like an echo. Clicks on my lamp, I turn my head. A sputter of light blinds my left eye. I blink. Something stabs my hip as I sit up. SAT prep book. Retakes in 2 weeks. Paris graduated from Las Vegas High a few weeks ago. She does not care about SAT prep. I'm studying. I gesture vaguely to the book. No, you're not. Let's go. She tugs my arm. I have work tomorrow. I rub my nose with the back of my hand. I smell like raspberry frozen yogurt from tonight's Yogi Berry shift. Leo, we broke up. My sister lifts her arms with the last word like one of those preachers on TV. She leaves them raised, fluttering her fingers. Last year, when she broke up with Gunnar Skillings, who was nice enough when he wasn't drinking, which wasn't that often, she moped around 3 days straight, eating dry puffins and listening to an endless loop of Pearl Jam and R.E.M. and Nine Inch Nails, because who wouldn't be cheered by that? Eventually, I made her eat some protein and do her homework and basically get on with things. He's a loser, I told her. You know that. Now I sit on the edge of my bed and ask, which one is Tobias? My sister is private about boys until she's sure things will last, which they rarely do. Tobias is supposedly 6'5" and works as a trainer at 24-Hour Fitness in Silverado Ranch, which is weird because Paris dates boys like Gunnar or Cooper Daniels, who has ink under his nails from drawing, chain smokes Kents, and plays guitar badly and off-key with a garage band that covers The Cure. Paris grins but says only pretty, right? Thrusting a hair clip at me, tiny flower petals fixed on the flat surface, glossed to a smooth sheen. A dried glop of translucent glue sits on the tip of her index finger. My sister is an artist, not like Cooper Daniels and his amateur comic books that will never go anywhere. She sells her stuff at gift shops, clips and necklaces and rings and pins and slicked-up collages of word and fabric and metal. She doesn't make much yet, but she could. Her room is filled with odds and ends that she turns into something. I make a noncommittal noise, and she fastens the flower to her long auburn hair. In the shadowy amber light, she looks thin and hollow-eyed, like she might blow away with the slightest of winds. I need pie, she repeats, foot-tapping the carpet. Breakup pie, adventure pie. Her face shifts. She presses a hand to her concave belly. It's true, she says. I'm sad, Leo. I let her haul me from bed. I need to sleep, I say, but I'm slipping my feet into flip-flops and combing my fingers through my hair, which used to be shoulder length until last month when I chopped most of it off in this short angled cut, one part sloping almost over my eye. I streak that piece purple. My sister, all smooth, perfect skin and cotton sundress and dark green eyes with gold flecks, looks at me sharply, brows drawing together. Her lips part like she's going to say something. Then she presses them shut and taps a finger to the oblong metal charm hanging from a knotted black cord at her clavicle. It says dream. She repurposed the metal pull thingy from some old piece of crap purse she found at a thrift store and etched letters into it. Her gaze scans my shorts and Ninjas versus Zombies t-shirt. Paris is not a fan of my fashion sense. She nudges with her shoulder. Pie. Now. Hurry. I need to sleep. I need to study. I need a lot of things, actually. A fun summer. Slim chance. An uber-high SAT score so I can get into Stanford next year. Decent chance. The money to pay for it, if I do. A life anywhere but here. But we are sisters. I watch out for her. That's the way it is with us.
It's great. You know, it's hard, I know, to read it and to have us really follow everything that you're saying. Sometimes it's hard to do that, but it was easy in this part.
Oh, good.
It was very easy. And there's a lot of you in that. You know, I haven't read the book and I've only heard it for the first time, but there's a lot of your persona in that. In about 10 to 15 seconds, it's a hard question, but what inspired you to write that novel?
I write a lot about sibling relationships. I write a lot about families. I write a lot about secrets. In this particular family, not everything is as it seems. There's some definite darkness going on here.
Yeah.
And that's what I mine here.
Yeah. I see that. I can see that. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
You've had good luck with that, I'll bet.
It's done okay.
It's done okay. I believe that. You know, inspiration really does come from reading great books. Barnes & Noble is around and prosperous, but they're not all about books, and there are fewer independent bookstores in the country than ever before. And I asked Ben about this when he was on the program over a year ago, and he said that it wasn't true of Brazos, that Brazos really does very, very well. And I can believe that because, you know, what Brazos does, I think, philosophically, is try to promote reading in the best sense of the word. Mark Twain said it best, a person who won't read has no advantage over one who can't. And I think that's really important. And I think that's really the philosophy that both of you are sharing. Get people to read, because if they don't, it's the same as can't, right?
Yeah.
That is just not there. Laura, your next story is all about the challenge, specifically getting your younger cousin excited about books. How old's your cousin?
Eight.
8 years old. Tell us a story.
Yeah, so I'm going to call him Adam here because I don't think my aunt and uncle would like his name being put out to the world. But like I said, Adam's eight, and I know everyone thinks that every kid in their family is great, but he's really fantastic. He loves hockey and friends, just all around amazing. And so when he was first born, we all showered him with books, especially my parents and me, and he really loved those picture books. Then once he got to an age where he could start reading independently, he just sort of stopped. When he had to read for school, he was falling behind, but more importantly, he just didn't enjoy it, which obviously as someone who works with kids and books is a very big problem to me. So I felt like he was missing out on so many fantastic stories and opportunities. And so I tried to kind of get into his mindset, you know, which was hard for me because, like I mentioned before, I've always loved reading. Anyway, so I think one of the problems, and I hate to say this and join the ranks of complaining baby boomers, but kids really are growing up differently than even I did like a decade ago. There's Netflix and YouTube and the internet and all these distractions that shorten attention spans. So it's really a lot more challenging for kids these days. And yes, I said kids these days. I expect my AARP card in the mail this week. but basically, the challenge is finding something that's going to interest him, that's going to get him to sit down with a book and keep his attention. And we're finding this is more books with some pictures in them. So Stick Dog, for example, or Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Are they the most prestigious and rigorous books? Definitely not, but that's the thing that I think a lot of parents and caregivers miss. At this stage in the game, it's not so much about what they're reading, it's just that they are reading. So my goal is to get him comfortable going to the library and his local bookstore, so that they don't feel like intimidating spaces where he can't fit in. And, you know, I think a main reason that a lot of adults don't read as much as they wish they did is because they didn't really grow up forming that habit, or if they did, they let it go. So if they want to start reading again, they have a hard time going to a bookstore or a library and finding what they want, which is why it's so important for us to build relationships with our customers and the rest of Houston so they know we're here for them. We want nothing more than to help them find their next amazing book. So with Adam, it's still a bit of an uphill battle. There are definitely things he'd rather do than pick up a book, but we're building that habit in him so 20, 30 years down the line, he feels confident so that he has the right tools at his disposal to be a lifelong learner, because that's what's going to help him grow as an individual, and that's what's going to make his life special.
Beautiful. And you're right. It's about a habit. It really is about a habit. Mm-hmm. You don't mean to suggest that you're a baby boomer. That's not what you were saying. And besides, I've had an AARP card for like a decade and a half. So I just want you to know that. I know it's hard for you to believe that. I know it's very hard to believe. I don't look any older than 30. But nevertheless, I am. Age is one of the subtle themes tonight, isn't it? I'm getting the feeling that you're picking on me because I'm a little older than you. A little older than you.
She's going to tag along for your...
Yeah,
for the,
right. I gotcha. I gotcha.
Special dinners.
I understand. You know, speaking of kids, let's talk about kids. Joy remembers when I walked into Brazos several months ago to ask Ben about a writer friend when I saw sixth graders from Maryland Performance and Visual Arts Middle School, the old Johnson Middle School, preparing to deliver original stories to a very proud audience of teachers, parents, and those of us fortunate enough to time our visit well. And they were wonderful. And Houston needs to know that so many of our children are guided by skilled educators who provide them with the right habits of literacy, reading, to create some outstanding work. And I've had a long-standing relationship with MPVA and their incredible broadcast journalism teacher, Vinnie Arlt, whose students are perennial guests and really listener favorites on this program. A few get back to me years later telling me about the fond memories that they've had being on this program. And I have so many stories, but I wanted to play this one by Zach Johnson, who told this in 2013. And this is one of many, but this one just embraced every heart with the kind of sensitivity that most could really only envy. Tatiana, would you be so kind?
Everyone who knows me knows I love baseball. I want to be in the MLB one day. And my favorite player is late 1960s Cardinals pitcher Bob Gibson. My baseball team, the Kings, went out for their first practice at the after about New Year's this year, hoping to start a great season, all leading up to our trip to Cooperstown, where our biggest tournament of the year was held. With 104 teams, it was basically the World Series. So the 2 months that followed, our team played pretty bad. We were all in slumps, fielding, I mean, all aspects of the game. It was just bad. A kid even quit because of the disappointment. So, but for some reason, after he quit, that sparked our team. And we went on a hot streak going about 34-10 in the streak. But it was a great time. It was because that tournament, we got fourth, but it was a big tournament. And it was all leading up to Cooperstown, which was our World Series. So when we arrived in Cooperstown, it's a big complex. We stayed at dorms there. They had their own complex there. We went to line the mess hall before our game, before our first games. And this team from Tennessee started making fun of us because we were so little. And we were just coming here to play baseball and win the tournament. We were so surprised and shocked. But we went and played our six pool games where we would be seeded, and we ended up being seeded number one out of all the teams. And I threw a no-hitter during the six games, the fourth game. And then it was championship day, a couple days after. And we went down to the batting cage to hit before our quarterfinal, semifinal championship game. And there was a team out of Florida making fun of how little we were again. They were like, you're not a good one seed. They're trash, pretty much. So we won our quarterfinal game on a walk-off home run. We won our semifinal game against the team that was making fun of us at the mess hall. And then all to the championship game, where we faced the team out of Florida who were making fun of us again. And we beat them 10-6. We won the whole thing. We were jumping up and down. The stands were really big. There's about 3,000 people in there, and they were all like applauding and everything. It was so awesome. Just think we overcame all that. So much obstacles and everything. It was so great. That's my story.
Okay. Thank you, Tatiana. Look, that was a pretty simple story, and he was having so much fun telling that story that you had to just want to hug him. But here's the other part of the story. 5 minutes later, after he told that story, it was just the story of childhood and innocence, just the love of playing baseball. It was raw. It was real. It was condensed. It was terribly well-focused, descriptive. And then 5 minutes later, he told a story about a friend that was killed along with his family in an SUV on the way back from Austin. Do you remember that story? It was a story, a terrible story about a family in Bel Air. Does that ring a bell at all?
Oh, I do remember that.
He told that story, and this is absolutely no exaggeration. I was in tears, and so was the other young man who was with him. We were in total tears, and he told the story with such incredible poise. And when he was done, I asked him, I said, Zach, you know, how did you feel about that story? How did you manage enough courage to tell that story? And he said, and he smiled and he said, well, it was easier telling the one about baseball.
Oh my gosh.
And it was, you know, there's something about radio that television doesn't offer, and I love both. But one of the beautiful things about radio and this program is that when you tell a story, you really become very introspective because you don't have many people in the studio. Sometimes you forget that there are many people listening to you. You tell the story to the people who are sitting in here, and people forget how intimate storytelling on radio is, because people who listen to us are in the car, they're on their way home, they're alone. They're not in groups. And he told me that it's because of sitting here that allowed me to tell it. I couldn't tell it in front of a lot of people. And then I reminded him a lot of people were listening to him, and they loved what he just said. It was indeed a lesson about the power of story. And these kids from Marilyn Visual and Performing are always here every year. And they tell these stories. And regardless of who they are, the stories are so profound and poignant. And they're so poised. And they don't think they are when they tell them. They think they're just kids telling a story. And we don't understand how powerful it is to teach our children about the sense of meaning of words, putting them together in a way that creates these images and meanings and incredible messages that they really can't tell any other way other than in stories, because it's all about stories. It's about that verbal and nonverbal symbol system that we put together to send messages about who we are. And the sense of connection, I think, is overwhelming. Laura Gravelin and Joy Preble on So What's Your Story? KPFT 90.1 Houston Pacifica Radio. Fueled for peace. You know, even though oral and written storytelling are different, they do have many similarities. And one of the similarities is that you need a great first line. Joy, let me just ask you, just in a few seconds, what makes a great first line? You're a writer and a speaker.
Yeah, a great first line, basically, it sets up, it grabs you, and it sets up a little part of the conflict. Like, I don't know if you remember the great first line from Charlotte's Web. Where's Pa going with that axe?
Yes.
That's a great first
line. And
we'll
be dead. Call me Ishmael.
Call me Ishmael. Yes. Yeah.
Those like that imitation, Tatiana.
Tatiana really liked that.
Yeah, she thinks I'm
She wants you to do that one again.
But you're the theater person. You should have appreciated that.
It was quite good.
Yeah. Best first line.
Yeah.
What makes a good first line?
I mean, I think it has to be something unique to the book. For example, like in Anna Karenina, the quote about families all being alike and different.
One.
That's not going to work for any other book but Anna Karenina.
Good point.
So it has to be something that's true to
yep.
your book and something that makes readers want to find out more.
Yeah. And in storytelling, and Tatiana took the class and she knows that, and Greg is a great storyteller. He's out there. We know that a first line is everything. That has to grab your audience's attention. Mm-hmm. So I'm walking through a Half Price bookstore the other day, another bookstore.
Not Brazos.
Yeah,
this is going downhill now.
Give me a break.
No,
I was in a Half Price book, and I saw this coffee mug with great first lines in literature.
I have that coffee mug.
You do?
I do.
So
but I got it
thought
at Brazos.
About, so I, yeah, at twice the price, not half the price. Only kidding. Okay. Yeah, so I thought, but it's worth it. So I thought about the best first lines in children's literature. Now, this is not a definitive list. It's Hank's list, which means it's probably not very reliable. But let me just throw a few at you, see what you think. Okay. Where's Papa going with that axe?
Well, we know. I like that
That's
one.
Why I was, yeah, Charlotte's Web. In the Light of the Moon, this is my son's favorite book. In the Light of the Moon, a little egg lay on a leaf. The Very Hungry Caterpillar.
It's a good one.
That's a good
okay.
one.
This one is from a book called Holes by Louis Sacker.
Mm-hmm. I love
There's
Holes.
No lake at Camp Green Lake.
It's a good first line.
Huh?
Yeah, it's a
is
good
this
first
okay?
line.
Am I doing all
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, you're killing
all right.
it.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid. First of all, let me get something straight. This is not a journal, not a diary. It's not a journal. Okay, it's a journal, not a diary. Excuse me. And then there's Fly Away Home. I like this one a lot. My dad and I live in an airport. Now, that sounds ridiculously simple, but it's so straightforward that I love it. And Marley was dead to begin with.
Ah.
Christmas Carol, right? How's that list?
Yeah,
it's a
okay.
good one.
Well, there are a few of them there, right? We have Running Out of Time, but I got 38 more. I'll bet you didn't want to hear the other 26.
Tatiana wants to hear
anyway,
the other
yeah, sure she does. Right,
in
sure
special voices.
She does. Yeah, but you know what? Don't go away, because next week, Mary Edgerton, Dr. Mary, is going to be hosting a group of foodie storytellers on our 4th of July program. Don't miss out, because why would you want to miss out on any program, right? You guys have a good time?
Yeah, great this
time.
Was wonderful.
Much better
yeah.
than you thought.
No, it was
and
we thought
and,
it was
and the
be
host
good.
Is so much more talented than you ever dreamed possible.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I gotcha. Thank you, Joy Preble and Lori Gravelin, for your insights, talent, and encouraging words about the power of story. Both of you continue to illustrate why stories expand the boundaries of the human heart. Get to Brazos Bookstore, everybody, for the best in books, literary events, all surrounded by those who love a great story. Don't you dare move, because the Vinyl Avenger and Wild Bill are up next with cool classics for the much cooler you. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And Treasure What You Hear. You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Dr. Hank, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Get even more from your KPFT listening experience by checking out our HD2 stream. new and improved. Get acquainted with our revamped weekly schedule now at kpft.org. Fear not, nationally syndicated favorites like Democracy Now!, Ralph Nader Radio Hour, Letters in Politics, and Economic Update remain. And good news, our evening schedule now features more local shows, including a stellar mix of public affairs, music, comedy, and Spanish language programming created and produced right here at KPFT. Don't miss a second on HD2. Mouse on over to kpft.org or on TuneIn Radio today. KPFT, Houston.
Thousands of you have heeded the call, but there's always room for more. You can find KPFT on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. From our latest updates to funny videos, contests, news, and more, you can find us anytime, day or night. We're at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd love to give you the latest.